Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. I am your host, Bill Yankovy, and this week on the show, going to review Impact Wrestling's Rebellion pay-per-view that took place this past Sunday, give you my thoughts on the matches and the show overall, plus a fun treat that's going to come up in just a few minutes where myself and Jim Boy Star talk about the Blood and Guts card and the show that's going to take place this coming Wednesday night. But before we get into that, I want to talk about some news making waves here in the wrestling world, and I'm going to start once again with Major League Wrestling. On last week's show, you heard me talk about that Major League Wrestling made a deal to have their shows be on Vice TV. Well, earlier this week, they announced when they would air the episodes on Vice TV, and folks, you do not have to wait much longer, because it will be this weekend that Major League Wrestling will be on Vice TV. So this is the press release that was sent out earlier during the week. Major League Wrestling today announced it will premiere on Vice TV this Saturday at noon Eastern. This Saturday, we kick off an exciting new chapter as millions of fans can now tune into Vice TV for Major League Wrestling, MLW CEO Court Bauer said. Just like Vice TV, MLW is an unfiltered and immersive experience. Witness top-ranked wrestlers and the next generation of wrestling's most legendary families as they clash each week on Vice TV. A national audience on cable and satellite will witness the rise of Contra Unit, a new hope emerge with the arrival of Ross and Marshall Von Erich, and some dynastic moments from Alex Hammerstone and Richard Holiday. Journey to the hottest arenas and fight clubs as rivalries are ignited for championship gold each and every week with MLW on Vice TV. Now, PW Insider was able to get the card of what will be on the first episode on Vice TV tomorrow. It will feature Marshall Von Erich against MJF and a no-holds-barred match with Davey Boy Smith and Simon Gotch. Next Saturday's episode will feature Jacob Fatu against Brian Pillman Jr. and Savio Vega against Richard Holiday. So those are the first two shows. Basically, it's kind of like when New Japan was on Access TV, where they would show you matches from a few years earlier, and you would be able, in a way, to catch up, learn everybody. So that's really what MLW is doing here, and I actually like this idea. So check it out. It is tomorrow at noon on Vice TV. Now, the other piece of news that MLW is in this week, and this is something that we're going to have to keep our eye out for the next, well, several weeks. There are rumors going around that MLW and WWE are in possible discussions of talent negotiations. It is being rumored that NXT wrestlers could appear on MLW. Of course, the wrestlers that would appear on MLW would be the NXT wrestlers that are not getting used and don't have much TV time as some of the other wrestlers do on NXT. So if that happens, that'll be very, very interesting. This was announced earlier today. Young Rock was renewed for a second season by NBC. Deadline.com reported today that Young Rock, which its season finale is this coming Tuesday, has been renewed for a second season. So here is the plot for the season finale of Young Rock. As Election Day 2032 approaches, Dwayne reflects on the ups and downs his family endured during his childhood in Hawaii, Pennsylvania, and Miami, and how the unpredictability of his family's story prepared him for this moment. You know, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I haven't watched Young Rock, and that's maybe because I want to wait until, like, it's all on Peacock, and then I might watch it from there. So that's probably what I'll do, is, like, watch the whole season and then figure out if I want to go on with season two from there or not. So, all right. So that's really some. Oh, yeah, the other. I almost forgot. Oh, my gosh. See, I'm telling folks, this week, I've had a very busy work week. I'm not making excuses. So if I forget a story here or there, I do apologize. It was announced earlier this week that CMLL has ended their work agreement with Ring of Honor. And, you know, to be honest, I don't see this as a loss for Ring of Honor. And in the same way, I don't see it as a loss for CMLL. I look at it as CMLL is the oldest wrestling promotion in the world. They have so many other working relationships that they have, with New Japan being the big one that they do have at the moment. So, actually, let me see if I can bring up, do they have the list? I don't think they have the list, which is unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, as of late, it seemed like Ring of Honor and CMLL weren't really doing anything with each other, plus the fact that Rush and Dragon Lee, who used to wrestle in CMLL and are currently in under Ring of Honor contract, and Rush is the Ring of Honor world champion, and doesn't quite work out there. And then you also add into the fact that Bandido was recently released from CMLL, or their working agreement ended, I guess would be the best way to put it. Like I said, I don't think it's that big of a loss for either promotion. Ring of Honor still has the deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is really the big deal that right now they have and probably are going to want to keep for as long as possible. But as we've seen, you know, with AEW, you can have a working agreement with other promotions and still be fine. So, you know, it is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. It's pro wrestling. That's how it is. Plain and simple. Alright, so earlier this week, I got a text from Jim Boystar. And Jim asked me if I was going to do a kind of a preview of the Blood and Guts episode of Dynamite that's going to take place this Wednesday night. And to be honest with everyone, I didn't really think about it at first, but then I was like, you know, it might not be a bad idea to do something like this. So I talked with Jim, and this was his idea. I have no problem giving credit where credit is due. So right now, you guys are going to hear myself and Jim Boystar preview this Wednesday's AEW Blood and Guts, along with some of our predictions for the winners of the matches that are going to take place this Wednesday night. And after that, come back here and check out my review of Impact Wrestling Rebellion. Folks, this Wednesday night on Dynamite is probably the biggest episode of Dynamite since the end of the quote-unquote Wednesday Night War. Because this Wednesday night is the first ever Blood and Guts match and event in its entirety. So here to join me to break it down, talk about the event, is Jim Boystar. How you doing, Jim?
Doing good, doing good. Looking forward to talk about Blood and Guts. You know, I have been a little distant from pro wrestling in the past month. When I've recorded WWE Free with you, myself, and Angry Cooter on March 27th, I basically said, since I don't have to cover pro wrestling regularly anymore, I'm probably going to really not bother with it for the most part. And that's somewhat true, but I did say I wanted to try to keep up with AEW. So just a little knowledge before going in here. I haven't watched AEW probably for like the actual show for like about a month and a half.
Right.
I'd have read results though every week. Impact, I know that Rich Swann lost to Kenny Omega, which I don't get that whole storyline. WWE, I could only stomach three matches of WrestleMania. That was the end of that for me. Ring of Honor and NWA pretty much have been dead to me. The only thing I do know is my friend Rowdy Ross likes that guy that I mentioned to you that begins with a D.
Oh, Danhausen.
Danhausen. So I know a little bit about him. And I guess the reason why I'm saying all this is because there's more than likely I'm going to get things wrong.
Right.
Like that you're going to have to correct me on. Because you only get so much from just reading results in a, you know, in a couple minute period.
Right.
And but before it looks like AEW, I think is in a, at least for me personally, is in a way better spot than they were about a month ago.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I'll point it out when we get to the Blood and Guts match. The promo or the segment they had this past Wednesday was so good. I can't wait to talk about it.
Which I actually did watch that before we were doing this recording.
Yeah.
So I did see that. And I don't mean just that, but, you know, one of my big criticisms about a month ago was the fact that, you know, why did you bring in Christian Cage? Why did you bring in Paul White? To be fair to AEW, they've not done what I thought they were going to do immediately, mm-hmm. at least to my knowledge.
Right.
Paul White not been on Dynamite, right?
Right. The only time he came on was the debut. That was it.
Right. There's been no hint as well as him actually competing in a match.
Exactly.
Which I love. Good. That's exactly what I want. As far as Christian Cage goes, whatever. As long as he doesn't go for the belt, I'm happy with that.
Well, right now he's kind of in a feud with Taz and Team Taz, so I think you're going to be okay for a while.
I'm good with that, too. That's, I think that's exactly where he should be right now until he's built up, if he even gets to that point where he is going for the title.
Okay, so real quickly, before we get into the card, how we get to the first Blood and Guts match. We have to go back a year ago, because the match was originally going to take place on March the 25th at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey.
And I was thinking of going.
Right, and this was going to be the blow-off between the Circle and the Elite. Well, about 2 weeks or so before, well, no, actually a little bit further than that, COVID-19 struck the United States, and it had gotten to most of the world by this point, finally made it to the United States, and because of this, everything had to be shut down. Everything. So, because of COVID-19... the original Blood and Guts match that we were going to get last year never happened. It did, however, end up becoming a Stadium Stampede match, which I actually enjoyed. So
I did too.
Yeah, it kind of ended up being better than what we were going to get in a weird way.
Well, I remember what was interesting during that time was I was sitting there wondering, because we didn't know that people wouldn't be back in stadiums for over a year and a half at this point.
That is true.
So I was like, do you think that they're just trying to not do that much and see where things go? And I think at some point, probably by the beginning of May, they were like, you know what? We're looking at least the fall before people come back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we can hold it for that long, which is ironic because I think this one, as much as I am looking forward to it, is extremely rushed.
Yeah.
But I also think I have some ideas on why that's the case as well.
Mm-hmm.
But did you ever think that they would somehow try to make their way back to the Inner Circle and the Elite?
I think once Stadium Stampede happened, I think it was like, there's no way they could do it.
Yeah. I agree.
Which is kind of in a way good, because, I mean, look at what happened with Omega and Adam Page. They end up being arguably the tag team of the year last year, keyword being arguably. And then Jericho has this feud with Orange Cassidy, which kind of makes Cassidy a bigger star than he was going into it. So
right.
It kind of worked out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, like Jim said, this kind of got rushed because MJF was in the Inner Circle for a while. And then on the March 10th episode of Dynamite, they had a war council. And this was after the Revolution pay-per-view. Sammy Guevara, who had quit the Inner Circle, returned and revealed that MJF was going to have the rest of the group betray Chris Jericho and kick him out of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Which did not work because Jericho and the rest of the group was in on it. So MJF basically got kicked out of the Inner Circle, but at the same time had a group ready to go, which ended up being the Pinnacle, which consists of Wardlow, MJF obviously, FTR, Sean Spears, and managed by Tully Blanchard. On April the 7th, it was announced that Blood and Guts would take place on May the 5th. And this is going to be very interesting because this is going to be, according to a couple of sites, the biggest or the largest AEW crowd since the pandemic started. The venue will be operating at 50% capacity.
See, I was interested in that because that was one of my things when I said it feels like it's being rushed. I wonder if, I had actually thought maybe they were going to open to full capacity because it's Florida.
Florida, yes.
So I was like, maybe as like that makes sense then because you need something to bring the crowd in that, quite frankly, has been able to go to these shows for a year exclusively. You needed something different, so I figured Blood and Guts. Do we know why they didn't do 100%? Because I know there was rumors that venues in Florida are doing 100% or close to doing that.
I haven't heard. I have not heard why they're not doing it. Maybe, I mean, it could be, you know, could be the city of Jacksonville, could be whatever county Jacksonville is in. It could be a number of issues.
Right. So. Okay.
So we will get to the Blood and Guts match in a little bit. There are four matches that are going to take place besides the Blood and Guts match. One of which I'm just going to get out of the way now, Jim, because it's basically going to be a squash match. Britt Baker against an opponent to be announced.
Is it?
Yeah.
See, I don't know, because I was thinking that they're going to try to bring someone in that Britt didn't know, and Britt thinking that she is going to get an easy win, and they actually win against her.
Right.
Because I know what you're thinking, and what most fans are probably thinking, Britt Baker wins, Britt Baker goes to fight Sheeta at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Which definitely that makes sense, but I want to see it one of two ways. Number one, what I just said, where there's a little bit of a curve in the road, and maybe she gets built up a different way. Or B, I'm okay with that, trust me. Like, if Britt just wins and then, but I don't know, something about it being not announced makes it feel very, very fishy and something's going to happen.
Okay.
Like, if she would have said Britt Baker against, was her name Red Velvet?
Yeah, Red Velvet.
Then I'd be like, okay, yeah, this is the Britt Baker squash.
Yeah. Well, we'll just see what happens on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But the other three each have something to it, the respective matches.
I don't think the tag match does.
Well, actually, there is something
Not the Moxley tag match, the tag team title number one contenders match.
That's actually where we're going to start off with, because it is SoCal Uncensored, Jurassic Express, the Varsity Blondes, and the Acclaimed. The team that wins the match will get a title shot on May the 12th, which is already a big card just on the one match that was announced for that show.
which oddly enough, I actually don't care about.
I know.
I don't know. I know Moxley's gonna win. It's against Yuji Nagata. I don't think there's a story there. I mean, I guess this week they can try to make me care about it, but right. I just don't. So of the four teams, here's what I know about them. So obviously you said it was SCU is one, mm-hmm. right? You said, obviously I know them. Jurassic Express, I still think that they should have the opportunity. I think they would bring a kid demographic in as champions. Mm-hmm. What were the other two?
Varsity Blondes.
I've heard of him, but I don't think I've ever actually seen them wrestle.
All right.
And then, what was the other one?
The Acclaimed.
They're the ones that rap, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I know about them from when I watch dark stuff every once in a while. Which actually hasn't been recent, to be honest with you. But I do remember from them. I like them. Honestly, out of all the teams there, the most boring team to win is by far SCU.
Well, I mean, the thinking for me with if SCU wins is it goes with the storyline that they've been doing since December, which is the next time SCU loses a tag team match, not a six-man tag, not an eight-man, but a regular tag team match, they would split up forever.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, on paper, it seems like that's the easy way to go, but I do like the idea of Jungle Express because that is a fun team to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in the Acclaimed, they've gotten better. Max Caster has really become one of my favorite heels to watch as of late on TV. And the Varsity Blondes, I hate to say it, but I think they're just there to be pinned.
Okay.
That's my feeling. So.
Yeah, so like I said, now that I know that, yeah, it does seem like SCU is going to win. What I am hoping from this, which I would love, is... So I don't think if SCU wins, I definitely don't see them actually winning the tag team titles the Bucks.
No.
So then they get broken up. And then we start the singles push for Christopher Daniels.
That would be pretty awesome, actually.
As like, because Christopher Daniels is up there in age.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great person to do the it's never too late storyline.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think that would be, I can't think of anyone other than him that can conceivably do it right now.
Right.
Yeah, I would be all for that. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd go SoCal Uncensored as my first.
Yeah, I have to too.
And then Jurassic Express would be my second. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we have the other tag match, Kenny Omega and Mount Nakazawa. I don't know why he's called Mount Nakazawa.
Like it though.
It is kind of cool. Against Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston.
Now, as much as I love the Inner Circle and the Inner Circle storyline and all of that for the Blood and Guts and the Pinnacle and whatnot, I just can't get behind this whole nonsense storyline. None of this shit makes any sense to me. Can you explain how we got here?
Okay. So, towards the end of last year, Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston had a feud. And Kingston and Moxley were friends for a long time, and then Moxley made the big time. It was that kind of a storyline.
Okay.
And then they had a title match at, oh my gosh, I what was the name?
What, the February pay-per-view?
No, the November one. Full Gear, that's it.
Okay, right, okay.
Moxley beat Eddie Kingston in an I Quit match.
Right.
So that, for the most part, ended the feud, but there was still animosity in a way, or feelings with both men, like hatred-wise. Then we get to the barbed wire match.
Right.
From the last pay-per-view. And Moxley is left there in the ring alone. Eddie Kingston comes in. He tries to get Moxley out of there before the ring blows up and instead protects him. And then that's where the famous botch comes into play.
Right.
So basically, because of that, Moxley and Kingston are back together as friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Omega and the Elite, you know, they finish basically with Moxley, but Kingston wants Omega for what he and the Good Brothers did to John Moxley, and they tried to break Kingston's ankle, and it's just been a back and forth. They're basically at a point where they just want to fight.
Now, where are the Good Brothers? Are they Impact, or are they AEW at this point? Because the last I remember, they were Impact.
They're still on Impact.
Okay.
But
and then
every once in a while, they'll be on Dynamite.
Okay, for what reason, though?
Either to be, like, hanging out with Omega, or to have, like, a six-man tag, or I guess now with the Young Bucks, you could do an eight-man tag.
I mean, see, I guess this is what I don't understand is how people are going back and forth with seemingly no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so who is in the – give me the breakdown of who is actually in the Kenny Omega group now. Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and the Good Brothers, is that it? And Don Callis?
And Don Callis. And then they have Nakazawa as, like, one of their, like, people that – assist them either with, you know, like social media or driving them around, do like a comedy gimmick there. And then the other one is Brandon Cutler as like their quote unquote young boy.
Right. Okay.
So it's basically like it's the main five and Callis. And then you have the two like sidekicks.
Okay. Here's the important question. Does Brandon Cutler have a win yet?
That's a good question.
I know he has a draw. I know that's a fact.
Let me...
Him against Peter Avalon.
Right.
To a draw.
Hold on, let me...
While you check on that, like he said, I don't know. I'm just so confused about the whole... You know, there's Impact guys, there's New Japan people coming in, like... And I get people are like, oh, it's so cool. But I'm just like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
No one's motivation makes any sense. Why would, like as we mentioned, Omega won the Impact Championship. Why did Impact even allow that to happen?
Brandon Cutler has won two matches this year.
Wow, okay, that must have been recent then.
And his career record, which I actually like about this website, is they keep, like, their career records.
Right.
9 wins, 31 losses, 2 draws.
Oh, I wonder what the other draw was. I know one was Peter Avalon.
Right.
But I don't know what the other one was.
I don't feel like looking up the other one.
Now, okay, so one of the reasons why I'm kind of, like, thinking that maybe this Blood and Guts match is happening like at such a rush pace,
mm-hmm.
is I'm wondering if they're trying to rev up another Stadium Stampede for the upcoming pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really want to do both Blood and Guts and the Stadium Stampede.
No.
And the Stadium Stampede, though, would be the Omega group.
Yeah, it would the have only- to be.
Right. Now, I'm thinking it would be the Omega, the Bucks, and...
The Good Brothers.
The Good Brothers, yeah. Right. Now, who they would face, like, obviously, they have Moxley, they have Kingston. This would be the only redemption that I could find of this stupid deal that Impact made, is Rich Swann gets in there.
Right, so there's three.
And I don't know who the other two would be.
Right, who would the other two be?
I mean, I guess you can, if you're doing the whole, like, oh, Kenny's going to all these promotions, then I guess you can get a New Japan person, but...
And then someone from AAA, maybe.
I see, but is he really doing, like, okay, with Impact, he's very clearly going there and kind of fighting their talent and then bragging about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is he really doing that to New Japan and AAA? Because I don't think he is.
I haven't seen it with New Japan. I'm not sure about AAA. If they do it with AAA, it probably would be on like their TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen anything, so...
See, that makes me think that, no, the two shouldn't be from there. It should, the other two should be someone from Impact again.
Right.
But I just don't know who it would be. I'd have to look at the Impact roster. Yeah. But what do you think that is a possibility of why Blood and Guts is basically made within a month?
Yeah, I think so.
And this will be, I mean, I think a lot will happen in this match to indicate if that's the route that they're going.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why this match is important.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing to happen is Rich Swann shows up. If he doesn't, then I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, because it really wouldn't make sense not to have Rich Swann in that match at this point.
Right. Also, yeah, Rich Swann was one of the first people that kind of got the you know, kind of been making fun of by Kenny Omega. Because I remember, mm-hmm. One of Kenny Omega's first appearances, he stayed in that trailer the whole time. And then Rich Swann wanted to go say hi or something, and he was denied by it.
Yep.
So that's one consistent thing. He's one consistent person that's been a part of this whole thing. I don't think he's ever been on AEW, though, yet.
No, not yet.
So like I said, this is the time, in my opinion.
There you go. I think, as far as the match goes, I think Moxley and Kingston have to win this match.
Yeah, and I also think Nakazawa takes the pin.
Poor Nakazawa.
Well, he is a mountain.
Yeah, he is. Okay, this next match, I never thought I'd be interested in this match, but I actually am. Cody Rhodes against QT Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
The build-up for this has been good. So, about a month and a half ago, QT Marshall asked for a match with Cody Rhodes. And Arn Anderson would be the referee, and members of the Nightmare family would be there. So it'd be kind of like an exhibition kind of match.
Mm-hmm.
So they do the match. And then towards the end, QT Marshall knocks out Arn Anderson. And, you know, it takes everyone by surprise. And then three members from the Nightmare family, and I have the names here, Nick Komoroto, Anthony Ogogo, which is a real name, by the way.
Yeah, I do like Ogogo.
Yeah. And Aaron Solo beat up everybody that was there that night that was a part of the Nightmare family. And it was done so well. I mean, they couldn't have pulled that off any better than they did.
Mm-hmm.
So then Marshall forms his own group called The Factory. And it's Marshall and the three young men that I mentioned. And they've been going... They've been wrestling members of the Nightmare family. And then this past week, Cody came back. I'm not sure, because I know he had a shoulder injury. But I also don't know if Brandy's had the baby yet. I don't think she has.
Right.
It would have been news if she had it by now. And they fought on top of the Nightmare Factory bus, which I didn't know they had until they showed it this week. And now we have this match.
This is a great storyline. Oh, I'm so much more into this storyline than I am with anything with Kenny Omega's group, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. Everything you said, great. I wasn't expecting it. I didn't know that I wanted this group to happen. My big prediction for this is where Arn Anderson turns on Cody.
Oh, that would be so good. and then you could go back, or not go back, but go forward like a couple weeks later, and then Dustin goes to Cody and he's like, "You should have heard what our dad said. Never trust an Anderson."
Yeah.
Oh, Oh, that would be great.
What do you got for this match as far as... I don't know if I say QT wins, though. I have a feeling Cody is going to win.
Right.
But I do think somewhere along the line, I think Anderson does something, or even just the start, like maybe, oh, he goes to try to help, tries to cheat, and it looks like he accidentally, quote-unquote, tries to trip Cody or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now that I'm thinking of it, and now that you said it, I could see somebody turning on Cody.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Arn, it would be fantastic. It really would. There's a couple... There's about two or three other people that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, who are you thinking of here? Are they Brandy and her baby?
No.
Imagine if the baby turned... That would be the craziest thing in wrestling maybe ever, if that is the case.
Oh my god, a baby heel turn.
And just, it's a heel turn literally 3 weeks in the making.
Oh god, actually that's a hell of a lot better than my ideas.
He's distracted by the crying.
There you go.
That's what happens, but then you realize the baby was happy the whole time.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God. All right, so I'm thinking maybe Dustin Rhodes?
I don't think that one.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
Another one is saying Billy Gunn, but I don't think that'll be it.
That'll be a really weird one, but I can see that.
But the one that kind of makes sense, if it happens, and I'll explain why, Red Velvet.
Okay.
Because when everybody was getting beat up that night, Marshall was going to hit a pile driver on the steel steps with Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Red Velvet comes out and, like, yelling at them to stop and talk some sense into them, and they don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
She could be, like, a double agent.
I think out of all the ones that you mentioned, I think I have the biggest problem with Red Velvet, for sure.
Okay.
Because there's going to be no payback then. You know Cody's not going to wrestle Red Velvet. I'm pretty sure AEW doesn't want to do, intergender matches. And that's a big problem, really. I don't want to talk too much into it, but it's usually a big problem I have with WWE is, like, they put... like certain women or certain position people into position where you know they're not getting a comeuppance. There's not going to mm-hmm. be a payback for it. So I hate the Red Velvet one for sure.
Okay.
What I do like, though, is the idea and the formation of the new and hot superpower group of the Nightmare Family led by QT Marshall and the Gun Club.
Ooh, that would be good.
They all hate Cody now.
Right. Oh, that would be good. If you're looking for someone to hire, folks, call up Jim Boy Star. He's got ideas that'll actually work.
Got a lot of ideas. And one of the big ones is coming up for the Blood and Guts one. See, one of the things I like about this card is there are certain things I can see him going both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cody and QT. I can see QT winning too.
Yeah.
For sure. But it's not like it's not as if I'm looking at and like, ugh, you know what? I don't care who wins. It doesn't, you know, whatever. I don't care about anyone here. No, I care about Cody and QT. I care about the Inner Circle and certain members of the Pinnacle. I'm looking at you, Wardlow, who I really don't care about. But overall, it's just like this. Even the Britt Baker thing, I'm like, okay, who's it going to be for Britt? Is she going to actually get someone of name value? Or is it going to be like the equivalent to, you know, your Saturday morning job guy or woman right. In this case? You know, it's super interesting to me.
And the other thing that I like about the last two matches we've talked about, and especially with Cody and QT, is this is not the final match of the feud.
No, right, exactly. If anything, I'm expecting the story to move forward.
Yes.
And that's what I also like about this card. There's no needless... I don't know if this is the right word. Needless pandering.
Right.
Like, meaning you're not... Look at the people that aren't on this card, and I don't think they will be because of the fact the Blood and Guts match, I'm sure, is going to take at least a half hour.
Yeah.
Sting, Christian Cage, Darby, Orange Cassidy. Like, it's... And I wish wrestling promotions in general would take a lesson from this.
Mm-hmm.
Not every single top guy needs to be on every show.
Right.
Or I should say featured. I mean, like, right. If you want to do a quick promo with Orange Cassidy or whatever, that's fine.
Yeah. But they don't have a big role in the episode.
Right.
And then, like, another example is Adam Page. Because he lost to Brian Cage this week.
Right.
And instead of rushing to do a rematch, you can maybe mention the loss, have an interview, you know, like a recorded interview, and that's it.
By the way, I was very surprised that Adam Page lost.
I was too. I was
because I thought that maybe I'm rooting for him because I pretty much don't want Christian Cage to get a title shot at the May pay-per-view. I was just like, oh no, is this like, because that'll knock Page down because I think he was either number one or number two in the rankings.
Well, let me pull up the rankings real quick.
Pull up the rankings.
They
yeah.
did talk about it. Okay, so this is from... Okay. So here are the top five. Adam Page was one. Orange Cassidy, two. John Moxley, three. Pac, four. Number 10, five.
Number 10?
Yeah.
Who is that again?
I think his name is Preston Vance. He's in the Dark Order.
Right, I figured that much. Okay.
So with Paige losing and Orange Cassidy winning last,
you would think Cassidy's moving up then.
Yeah, he's got to be number one.
Okay. I wouldn't mind seeing an Orange Cassidy-Kenny Omega match for the belt. That seems pretty good to me.
That would be pretty entertaining.
Okay. So what's your big prediction for Blood and Guts? Oh, wait, we want to talk about the promo first.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the promo. Let's because, yeah. I mean, just the like, just saying it's Blood and Guts kind of, you know, has the hype in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But that segment, I really liked it. Because the whole idea was they're going to do a coin toss to decide who gets the one-man advantage.
Right.
And Sean Spears is like, screw the coin toss! And then he cuts a promo, and then he mentions Sammy Guevara, and then Sammy gets on the mic, and Sammy is like, look, if you guys won the one-man advantage, you got it. It's yours. And then he goes on to volunteer himself to start the match next week.
Right, which is, I think that's a good start.
It is.
Like, for an actual match, like, because he's going to be the workhorse of the match. You know, they always look at those first two. Now, if I were to guess from the Pinnacle side, I'm going to guess it's going to, I know we don't know it yet. I'm going to guess it's going to be one of the FTR people.
That's what I'm thinking. If it's Sean Spears, it makes sense because he's the one that kind of antagonized Guevara, but one of the FTR would probably be the better choice.
Here's my prediction. I'm going to give a little bit of prediction on the order now that I'm thinking of it.
Okay.
So, okay, one of the FTR guys, I don't care because it doesn't actually matter which one for what I'm thinking of here.
Right.
So then they go, then the Inner Circle has the advantage. The other FTR guy comes in, and that's when they start dominating Sammy Guevara with all these friggin' tag team moves.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're good at. And then on the Inner Circle side, you have Hager come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hager's supposed to be the you know, legit fighter, I guess. I don't think he's wrestled lately, so I don't know how they're really booking him at that much.
Right.
But let's assume that he's still doing like, oh, I'm a legit fighter. Yeah, of course he'll be the one to help. Then you probably have who's left? Then probably Spears.
Mm-hmm.
Then one of the probably Santana. Again, those two were interchangeable in these next two. Yeah. Either way, it comes down the last two is MJF and Jericho.
Right.
That's my order here.
That would have. I definitely agree with the final two.
Uh-huh.
As far as the rest, I have no idea how it will go.
All right, so tell me more about this promo. So
after Guevara agrees to not only let the Pinnacle have the one-man advantage and him volunteering, which on here on Wikipedia they have listed, on the final Dynamite before Blood and Guts, the two stables had a parlay to determine who would have the entry advantage, which the Pinnacle won. Well, they didn't win. They were kind of, anyway. So then the FTR cut a promo on Santana and Ortiz and how, I want to say it was Santana, just recently had a newborn baby.
Okay.
And how Ortiz has a daughter and how, like, when they leave to go to Jacksonville to tell them goodbye because this might be the last time they see their daddies.
Mm.
And then Santana and Ortiz cut a promo about, you know, how they're badasses and that stuff. And then we get to MJF and Jericho, because they completely skip Wardlow and Hager, which I actually don't mind.
No, I don't mind. They're supposed to be the tough brute guys that don't really talk, so I'm fine with that.
And then MJF, he cuts a good heel promo, but it's Jericho that sells the match for me. Because he talks about how, you know, MJF's 25 and what he's done when he was 25. And Jericho is like, when I was 25, yeah, I was curtain jerking in WCW. But I was main eventing in Mexico, Japan, Germany. I was earning my stripes. I was earning my way up. And he talks about how he had to earn everything. And how he did it, and he earned the respect of the wrestlers in the back, and how MJF basically has been given everything on a silver platter, and how at Blood and Guts he's going to kick his ass and make him bleed, and that's it. There's no post-promo fighting. It's just them staring at each other, and that's how it should be.
Right. I agree, yeah. What, do you have a big prediction for this on something, not outside of, like, who actually wins?
Right. I think Tully Blanchard's going to get involved in the match. And the way he's going to get involved is going to be one of two ways. He will either have a bunch of weapons with him, say, like, in his pockets or in, like, maybe hidden in his shoes. Just trying to think of something creative. And just hands them off to the different members. Or he physically gets in the cage.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I did want to ask you on how the rules and such go for this. Because I know it's War Games, basically.
Mm-hmm.
We do have confirmed that there's a top on this cage, right?
Yes, there is a top.
Oh, thank God, because that's the thing I don't like that the WWE one kind of got rid of, not having a top on the cage.
Right.
And so here's the weird thing, and I don't know if – I would love if they tried to do this, but I don't know how much flexibility they have in regards to this. Is there any chance that – because this is on TV, you have to remember that.
It is.
That they can – conserve all the commercials outside of this match?
Unless they do like the...
That's going to be weird because the clock is still going while we're not watching.
Unless they do the picture-in-picture thing.
I guess, but sometimes they don't always do the picture-in-picture
thing. No, they don't.
And the only reason I said they might not be able to control it is because if like ads were bought, maybe certain ones want to be played between 9:30 and 10 o'clock, and they're more because it's that time. You know what I'm saying? Like, they might not have control over that.
Yeah. I really don't know how it's going to work out. Unless they find a way to maybe buy, like, the commercials off and be like, we're going to buy the airtime for this time to this time, which would be the end of the show.
Right.
That's the only way that I could think of that it would work.
Well, I mean, we're going to have to find out. I mean, they look, we're recording this, and then, well, this is airing on Friday. A lot can change in the next, what, 5 days. So yes, we might know more about this by the time it actually airs. But, all right. So my thing with this is, well, let me ask you this. Are you able to, do you have a concrete who you think is going to win, who or whatnot?
I don't have a concrete, but my instinct is telling me Pinnacle is going to win it. Because it's a newly formed faction. They got together, like, I think I said, like, 2 months ago. You can't have the new faction lose this big of a match.
So here's my, I agree with you. I think that I have a feeling the Pinnacle is going to win because of what you said, but like, in some ways, I feel like that's the most boring way to go, because I feel like everyone knows that that's probably what's going to happen, unless, you know, and if the Pinnacle does win, the other half of my prediction is, Arn Anderson joins them after turning on Cody Rhodes earlier in the night. That's the other half of that. If Pinnacle wins, if they don't win, then I wouldn't have Anderson join them.
Right.
And then, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, Pinnacle wins. No, never mind. I was going to say something, but I don't think it makes sense.
Okay.
However, I'm not against the Inner Circle winning, and here's why. I think it might be a fun idea to have Inner Circle win, right? They put away Pinnacle, and let's face it, like you said, Pinnacle's only like a month lived.
Yeah.
If they lose and then they break up, then it could wind up being the story here is that the Inner Circle just got rid of their, quote unquote, their threat of another stable.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, and you could please correct me if I'm wrong, because again, I haven't been watching the shows.
Right.
Other than MJF turning on Chris Jericho, have they done anything else that indicates at all that they're good guys? I guess here's what I'm saying is, you, the only reason we're saying that the Inner Circle are the good guys here is because MJF turned on Chris Jericho and they attacked the Inner Circle.
Right.
But personality-wise, they're all still assholes.
They still are, yeah.
So what if that's the only reason they've become good is because they need to defend their territory. They beat the Pinnacle and then basically brag about how they cemented themselves for good now as the top main faction. But guess what? There's like four other factions at this point in AEW. And you can build one up to once again try to take down the Inner Circle.
I'm trying to think. I don't think there has been.
Right. It's not like, okay, let me give some examples of what I've been looking for, because people are probably wondering, what in the world would I even be looking for? Well, like, let's say if Sammy were in a match, what is he like doing the whole, like, if he's in a submission hold, is he doing the
right?
Is he, you know, talking to the crowd and like thanking them for supporting us, stuff like that? I don't think they are, though.
No.
By the way, I just to throw this out there, I hate that they're on bikes.
No, that was only that one time.
Was it? Okay, good. I don't want it on them on bikes again. But anyway, so they're not doing it. The only, again, it's by default of what happened to them. Mm-hmm. They're still the same people that you knew a few months ago before MJF was even in the picture.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm okay with the Inner Circle winning if they go that route. And as far as who would fight them next, that I probably would have to think about.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, like, who are the good guy stables right now? I guess the Dark Order's good,
Dark
right?
Dark Order. Best Friends are more of a tag team. They're not really a stable.
By the way, I just throw this out there. I hate that What's-Her-Face is a best friend now.
Oh, Chris Statlander.
Doesn't make any sense. Wait, so they've been best friends, but she was there before. It'd be one thing if they brought someone new in, like if even, you know, if a new woman came in, they were like, oh yeah, we've hung out forever. I just wasn't in the company, but she was there before.
Yeah.
Hate it. Let's see.
Death Triangle, but that's only three people, so that really wouldn't work.
Well, let me ask you this. Whatever happened, I thought Eddie Kingston was with them. Is that done?
That's done.
Okay. Through explanation, or just they're not, they just didn't do anything with them? Like, was there a reason that they were done?
Well, okay, Penta and Rey Fénix left Kingston because Kingston wanted Fénix out of the group.
Okay.
And Penta's like, no, he's my brother. You know, you okay. can kick him out. So that's how Penta and Fénix left. And then, I guess, with Kingston and then the Butcher, the Blade, the Bunny, the Candlestick Maker, you know, there was no explanation on that one.
All right, so I'm thinking a little bit more down the line in the months to come. What if somehow the Elite turn good again? And you can revisit that. I'm talking about like in the fall. I'm talking like in the fall at least. But think about that. So it would be Kenny, the Bucks.
Right.
Cody. Why Cody? Because of Arn Anderson.
Right.
Oh, wait, no, that wouldn't happen if the Inner Circle.
Right.
So that doesn't work, actually. See, I know when to admit when I'm wrong with this stuff. Paige, I guess, somehow, maybe they finally, like, oh, we're friends again.
Yeah.
By the way, quick, interesting fact. So it was recently my friend Rowdy Ross's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do this every year, but I got him something.
Oh, no.
I got him the Adam Page, you might have to look this up to get the exact name, the Golden Horseshoe book.
The Golden Horseshoe?
Can you look that up? Look, Adam Page Golden Horseshoe. I believe it's for ages 4 to 7.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, I see it. Adam and the Golden Horseshoe.
Yes. I'm like, look, you can read this to your dog before you go to bed every once in a while.
It's on Amazon for $15.45.
I mean, I got it for him, so.
Yeah, I know. I'm just telling our listeners if they want to get a copy of it.
There's also a Cody Rhodes book and a Young Bucks book. But
I have the Cody books.
So. My friend, I feel, and I told him this, I was like, I think you hate the Bucks, so I'm not getting, I wasn't getting that one. I'm like, I feel like you only tolerate Cody because he likes the same things that he likes, meaning Star Wars and Legends of Zelda.
Right.
So I was like, I think the best bet is for me to get the Adam Page book, which I think you're the most okay with. And he said I was right, basically.
It has, its customer review on Amazon is a 4.9 out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
So it's very, I guess it's pretty popular.
So yeah, going back to the stable wars, though, I don't, like I said, I feel like you can definitely build a new stable up. I do think the Pinnacle is going to win, though, because that's I would just love for them to throw that curveball in a way. Of,
right.
Like, the Inner Circle wins because everyone thinks Pinnacle's going to win because they're a new group.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's basic, like, Wrestling 101. Like, I've seen this a million times. The Inner Circle idea, I don't think I've seen.
Yeah.
Where they're basically like, well, why did you even cheer us? We never changed. It's not my fault that you cheered us.
And the other thing that would also work, or But you know what? Here's the other thing. And I just thought about this. And this is kind of going back to, like, WCW and even the Crockett days.
Mm-hmm.
The good guys almost always won the war games. It was very, very
true
that the heel team ever won.
Well, except for the NWO, but the NWO won everything, which was a problem.
That is true. That is true. So, yeah, I mean, there's a positive and a negative to picking both sides if, you know.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you one thing that I absolutely do not want happening. Is there, because, first of all, is there anything that you can think of that you absolutely do not want to see happen during the course of this match or the post-match?
There is one.
What?
I do not want them to do, because, you know, I mentioned Tully getting involved.
Yes.
I don't want the Inner Circle to have, like, a surprise backup person, like Mike Tyson, because Jericho and Tyson made up recently.
Which didn't even make any sense. Did that ever get explained?
Yeah, Jericho called Tyson, and they had a conversation on the phone, mm-hmm. and Jericho apologized for what he did over the years, and that he respects Tyson.
All right, I mean, I guess that's a good explanation today. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm actually a little surprised they decided to bother to give us an explanation on it.
Because I don't want it to end up being, like, 6-on-6. Like, they're like, oh, we, you know, it's a surprise. It's 6-on-6. I just want it to be 5-on-5. If there's outside interference, I'm fine with that. But don't make it like, oh, we've got a sixth member.
Right.
I don't want that.
I agree with you, but also to another level, meaning I don't want a new person to come in after this match and take anything away from anything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be like, I know he's here already, but I'll just use Christian Cage as an example.
Right.
Like, to me, that would be the worst, is like one of them wins, they're celebrating, the announcers talk about how brutal the match is, then here comes fucking Christian Cage, and it's like, oh great, now it's all about him and not like what these 10 guys just did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that. The only way I'll find that acceptable is if it really is someone that would get people talking for the next week, and I mean, that's a very small list of people that I think would really make a difference.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't even know if I can name 5 of them right now, to be honest with you. But yeah, don't take away from this match. Let these guys have their moment, all 10 of them, and whether it's the winning side or the losing side, let that be the last thing you remember is how brutal this match was.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything else you want to add on before we wrap this segment up?
No, I think everything's good. I guess I'm going to try to keep up with the AEW. I mean, I'm definitely more interested now than I was a month ago. I think I still don't like the whole Kenny Omega Impact stuff. It's really stupid. I even hate even more that Tony Khan is like an on-air thing now for Impact, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he's also not good at it. Like, that's the other half of it, too.
Right.
But even if he was, I probably would still have a problem with it, because I'm someone that needs to have no authority figures in wrestling for at least 6 years, I think, until I'm like, okay, I'm good with, like, maybe someone being an authority figure.
Mm-hmm.
That's for any promotion. Right. In general. So I think that's my one hope with that tag team match, is that something happens in that match, the Moxley match.
Yeah.
That either A, makes things make sense with the Impact stuff, or B, does something to be like, oh, okay, I guess that is pretty interesting, rather than just like, oh, it's a guy coming from another promotion.
Yeah.
Explain this shit, please.
All right. Anything you want to...
Yeah, check out Bill Learns Kingdom Hearts. In this last episode, we talk about how Pinocchio lied about he was dying.
Yeah.
That happens. And then we have a summon special coming this Sunday. And then from there, we'll see where we go after season one. I have some things possibly being worked on, but nothing concrete right now. And of course, that's podcasting on Twitter and Instagram, and that's podcasting.com.
All right, Jim, thank you very much for coming on, and we'll see how Blood and Guts ends up being next week. All right, let's send it back to, well, me. All right, welcome back. Thank you again, Jim, for joining me for the show this week, and now I'm going to talk about Impact Wrestling Rebellion, which took place this past Sunday, and I have to say, it was an enjoyable show. I rather enjoyed watching this show from beginning to end. There really wasn't anything horrible on the show. There's like one match on the main card I really wasn't a big fan of, but other than that, the rest of the show was actually pretty good. This was a pretty good pay-per-view. So, let's just jump right into it. We had a pre-show match, which saw Rosemary and Havoc face Susan and Kimberly. There's really not much to say here. There was a moment where it looked like Susan was going to transform into Sue Young, but that did not happen. Rosemary and Havoc got the win. I gave it a D. I think that's a fair grade to give. There was really no significance to the match. There wasn't anything on the line. So I think a D is a pretty good grade for that match. So the main show, or the pay-per-view, we begin with a triple threat match for the X Division title. Ace Austin is the champion going into this match. The challengers are TJP and Josh Alexander. And wow, what a great match this was to start the pay-per-view. I'm not going to say had it been later, it probably would have been the match, the show of the night, or the match of the night. But I could make a very good argument that this was the match of the night had it not been for the main event, which I'll get to later on. Very good match, saw a lot of good wrestling moves, good submissions. Madman Fulton got involved when he needed to get involved, and it was really well done. I enjoyed this match, and it ends with Josh Alexander hitting a double arm pile driver, on Ace Austin to win the X Division title. And to me, it shows right there that the company is behind Josh Alexander. He really was the workhorse of the team, and that is with all due respect to Ethan Page, because Ethan Page is a tremendous wrestler as well. Where Ethan Page has the charisma in the ring, in and out of the ring, Josh Alexander is just a mechanic in the ring as far as moves go and what his ability is. Very, very well. A very good wrestler, enjoyed this match. I gave it a B+ to start the show. Meltzer gave it 3.75 stars. Then we go to the 8-man tag match. But before we go to that 8-man tag, backstage, if you do this, you're not going to automatically be in the group Violence by Design, but you're going to be highly considered. So, from this point on, every match has a video package, which is like, okay, I understand why you're doing it, but did every match really need that? So, the match is James Storm, Chris Sabin, Eddie Edwards, and Willie Mack against members of Violence by Design of Rhino, Joe Doring, Cody Deaner, and the mystery partner, the debuting W. Morrissey, a.k.a. Big Cass. And holy cow, he looked tremendous. He looked in fantastic shape. You could tell that he meant business, getting himself back into very excellent condition. And he looked like $1 million in there. He really did. The story to this match is just the dominance of Violence by Design. Team Impact had its chances here and there, but it was Violence by Design that just took this match. And, you know, I was the two that I was the most impressed with in this match were Morrissey, obviously, because this is his first, like, big-time pay-per-view match in a few years. And Joe Doering, there is just something about this guy that makes me want to see him more. And I know he wrestled in All Japan for a while. He was the Triple Crown champion there on a few occasions. I want to see more of Joe Doering on my television. And as far as Morrissey goes, I thought he did good for, you know, the first match on Impact. If it becomes a long-term thing, just have to wait and see. I gave this a C+. Meltzer gave it 3 stars. Then we go to Brian Myers against Matt Cardona. And the beginning of the match is very interesting because Cardona wants to do a handshake. Myers flips him off. Cardona beats him up. He's going for the Broski boot, which is now being called the reboot. And Myers gets out of the way. So they have the match, wrestle, and then they do this injury spot where Cardona, you know, hurts his knee. And there are referees that come out, and Myers wants to continue the match. And in a way, it was kind of like, yeah, this is not a real injury. There would have been something wrong, I think, if that injury had happened. So Myers gets Cardona, grabs his hand, and then kicks him in the knee and beats him up, and Myers gets the win. Kind of dropped the grade a little bit. I ended up giving this a C+ as well. Meltzer gave it 2.25 stars. Then we go to the Knockouts Tag Team title match where Tasha Steelz and Kiera Hogan, the champions going into this match, fought Jordynne Grace and Rachel Ellering, and Jazz, who had just recently retired, was in the corner of Grace and Ellering. Now, when I watched Ellering, what I noticed, and this is a good thing that I noticed, is she gained some weight. Like, she looks like she put some muscle on there, on the arms, on the, you know, on the abs, that area. She looked good. She looked good. Actually, all four women looked good in the match. It just seemed, though, in a way, that, yeah, I know, you know, Rachel Ellering at the time was advertised as the mystery partner until that Impact happened, but it seemed like with Grace and Ellering, it's like, well, okay, it's a good team, but what's the chemistry, you know? So maybe when we go forward, we'll see both of them, you know, gel together as a team and go from there. Ellering hit a spinebuster on Kiera Hogan. 1, 2, 3. Grace and Ellering, the new Knockouts Tag Team Champions, gave this match a C+. It was kind of an enjoyable match. Meltzer gave it 2.75 stars. Then we go to the last man standing match, Sami Callihan against Trey Miguel. There were a couple of crazy spots in this match. Miguel does a dive early on that looked really, really good. Sami Callihan gets a wrench, puts it into Miguel's mouth. There's a lot of back and forth, but the ending, I really, really liked the ending, where Callihan has pulled a table out. He's pulled a table out, and it's over by, on the outside, by, you know, like one of the corners. So Miguel is beat up at this point. He's out. So Callihan takes the steel steps, and, you know, these are the kind of steel steps that are like, a kid could carry him. He takes the steps, and he puts it over where Miguel is. And Callahan is going to sit on the steel stairs. And it's like, okay, that's a creative way to win the match. It's a pretty good idea. I don't know why anybody else has ever thought of this. Well, in the meantime, Miguel comes from under the ring. He gets back up. The match continues. He hits, I guess you could say it was an ace cutter or a diamond cutter, however you want to put it. And Callahan goes through the table. The referee counts. Miguel gets up, but Callahan can't make it. Trey Miguel wins the match. It was a very entertaining match. There were a couple of good spots. I enjoyed the match. I gave this a B-. I liked the ending. Nothing really to complain about with this match. So B- for me. Meltzer gave it 3.5 stars. Then we go to the tag team title match. Juice Robinson and David Finlay defend the tag titles against Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson. Just wasn't really a big fan of this match. I just really wasn't feeling this match. And I don't know. It just, some reason, it did not click with me. Robinson and Finlay got the win with a small package to retain the tag titles. I gave this a C-. Meltzer gave it 3 stars. But like I said, I just could not get into that match. Then we go to perhaps the worst match on the pay-per-view, on the main show, which is Deonna Purrazzo against Tennille Dashwood for the Knockouts title. This chemistry, I have no idea what happened here. It just did not look that good. And it's kind of a shame because Purrazzo is such a good wrestler, one of the best women's wrestlers I think out there today, and Tennille Dashwood can put on a good performance. These two just did not click. I thought it just didn't really work for me, which is kind of a shame because they've really been emphasizing again on the Knockouts division, and to have this match be your semi-main event is kind of a big deal. Purrazzo got the win. There was a 3-on-1 beatdown, and then Taylor Wilde made a return. Yeah, remember Taylor Wilde? I sure as hell don't. I gave the match a D+. Meltzer gave it 2.5 stars. Then we get to the main event of this pay-per-view. Champion versus champion, title for title. Rich Swann against Kenny Omega. They made this a big deal. They did a really good job. I mean, they didn't make it into like, oh, this is the biggest match in the history of professional wrestling, but they made it a big deal because of who was there, the champions of the past, the ramifications, what if the belt leaves Impact. They did a really good job. Mauro Ranallo was on commentary for this match. The man did not miss a beat. This was a really good match. Good back and forth early on, and I really liked it. There really wasn't any interference of any type. It was, if, let's say, like, Omega was down, Callis or the Good Brothers would be there to, you know, pound on the mat, be like, come on, get up. And then the same with Rich Swann. You know, if he was down, Eddie Edwards and Willie Mack were there to support him. So I liked that. Now we get to one point in the match that I actually liked, because when it happened, my initial thought was, oh no, this is going to be like this big swerve, and it's like AEW all the way. So Rich Swann goes for a move and knocks the referee out, which was Brian Hebner, who is the Impact referee. So Callis slides a chair into the ring. He's distracting Aubrey Edwards. Kenny has the chair. He's going to hit Swann with the chair, but Edwards sees it. So she takes it out of his hands, and I really liked this. And it's like, no, if you're gonna beat him, you're gonna beat him in the ring. You're gonna beat him fair and square. You're not gonna use the chair. So I really liked that. And then after like a few more minutes, it ended up being just all Kenny Omega. It was V-trigger after V-trigger after V-trigger. And then he hits the J-driller. And then, you know, after like three or four attempts, he finally hits the one-winged angel on Rich Swann. 1-2-3, Kenny Omega wins. He is the new Impact World Champion. A good main event. I really liked this main event. I gave it a B+. I think Meltzer's rating is a little bit generous, to be honest. He gave this 4.5 stars. I think that's being a bit generous. But it was kind of a foregone conclusion Omega was going to win that match. But all in all, I thought this was a pretty good pay-per-view. There wasn't anything terrible on the show. There wasn't anything really bad on the show. I would say, honestly, most of this show is very watchable. If you're interested in getting the replay, or if you're thinking about watching Impact Plus and you don't have anything to watch, go check out this show. This was a pretty good show from Impact Wrestling, and their next major pay-per-view is in July with Slammiversary, although no date was announced. That is something very important to mention. No date was announced for the pay-per-view, so I guess we'll just have to wait and see in the upcoming weeks ahead when Slammiversary will be. Well, on that note, that is going to do it for this week's episode. So let's get into the plugs. If you guys have any questions or comments, send an email, wrestlingman@thatwrestlingshow.com. Follow the show on Twitter @WrestlingShow11. Follow us on Instagram @ThatWrestlingShow. Join our Facebook group. It is That Wrestling Show Fan Group. You type that in the search bar on Facebook, and bam, you're right there. If you can't find it, it's okay. I put the link in the description of each and every episode. And if you like what you heard here, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/ThatWrestlingShow, where you really get some fantastic quality content for very little money. Well, let's talk about some of the friends of the podcast. Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast with Joe Morata and Michael Quinn. This week, they took a break from doing the regular show, and they did a live review of WCW Spring Stampede 1994. So you can check that out right now. Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Also, check out Greetings from Allentown with Peter Winston. He watches one episode of wrestling each week and discusses it in his own unique way. This week, he discusses an episode of WWF Superstars from January 7th, 1989, which features the Hart Foundation against the Honky Tonk Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine. That is this week on Greetings from Allentown. And check out Juice Pro Wrestling, where this week, Steve Grimmett, the vocalist of the band Grim Reaper, joins to discuss his career, Lionheart, Thin Lizzy, who inspired him, and of course, their two videos that were on Beavis and Butthead, and so much more. That's this week on Juice Pro Wrestling. If you're looking for non-wrestling related podcasts, check out the Best Pick Movie Podcast. They do a brief discussion on the Oscar winners that were announced this past Sunday. Lowest viewed Oscars ever. And at this time, I'd like to thank the Academy for letting me say to not watch the Oscars and instead watch Impact Wrestling. You're welcome. Anyway, also this week, check out Last Stop Penn Station with Carrie Silkin and Ian Riccaboni, where this week it's Hosts and Ghosts. That's this week on Last Stop Penn Station. Check out The Castle Vault, which is a chronological deep dive of Disney animated films powered by Disney+. This week, it is two episodes. They discuss the 2015 Pixar movie Inside Out, plus Volume 4 of Pixar Shorts. Check that out on The Castle Vault. On Dave and Ethan's 2000 Inch Weird Al podcast this week, there's more rare Weird Al clips with the one and only John Bermuda Schwartz. That is this week on Dave and Ethan's 2000 Inch Weird Al podcast. And check out Bill Learns Kingdom Hearts, the podcast that is really a hit around the world. We broke the top 100 on Spotify in games in Hong Kong. So I'd like to thank all of the listeners in Hong Kong who listened to our podcast, myself and Jim Boy Star. Basically, this podcast is me talking about the Kingdom Hearts video game. This week, the episode is entitled Summoning. Might want to check out to see what that is all about. Next week on that wrestling show, oh my goodness, there's going to be a lot to watch this coming week because this Sunday is the latest episode of Annie's biography on Macho Man Randy Savage, the newest episode of WWE's Most Wanted Treasures, and is the Season 3 premiere of Dark Side of the Ring this Thursday, all about Brian Pillman. So I think next week here on the show, I'm going to talk about those three shows, give you guys my thoughts on them, plus your latest wrestling news and anything else that is going on. Now, before I leave, I do like to do this annually. It is the Kentucky Derby predictions. It is this weekend, the Kentucky Derby. 20 horses are in the field for this year's Kentucky Derby. The favorite, as of this recording, is Essential Quality, who at the time of this video, or at the time of this video, at the time of this recording, is an even money favorite, with Rock Your World being another top choice at 9-2, and also Hot Rod Charlie at 8-1 odds. There is a scratch. Who was it? King Fury is out of it, so it's now going to be a 19-horse race instead of 20. If I was going on names, my pick to win the Kentucky Derby this year would be Soup and Sandwich, who is coming out of the 19 gate at 35-1 odds. But I'm not going to do that because I actually want to be right on my predictions. Essential Quality has been really the talk for the last several months, undefeated, has not lost. But Rock Your World is a really good horse. But the problem with those two is the position that they're both in. Essential Quality's coming out of the 14 gate, and Rock Your World's coming out of the 15, so they're going to be right next to each other to start the race. I'm going to go with the 9 horse, Hot Rod Charlie. He's the third choice at the time of this recording at 8-1 odds. I smell a minor upset. It's not going to be a big upset. It's going to be a minor upset. Hot Rod Charlie will win the Kentucky Derby coming out of the 9 gate at 8-1 odds. Well, hopefully I am right with the Kentucky Derby. Most times I'm not. I'll give you guys that. I am not right on most occasions, but you know, you can be right every once in a while. So on that note, everybody have a good, safe weekend, and come back next week for another episode of That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. And as always, wrestle on.